Good afternoon, and welcome to the pre-proposal conference for the request for proposals for community-based health information exchange onboarding program RFP, which is OHA 4330-17. Our presenter today will be Kristen Bork, Lead Policy Analyst, Office of Health IT under the Oregon Health Authority. I'm Francie Neville, a policy analyst, also with the Office of Health IT. And we also have with us David Reynolds, a contract specialist at the Office of Contracts and Procurement. Also in the room with us are Lisa Parker, Director of HIT Policy and Meaningful Use Programs, and Ivan Kulitz, Executive Assistant. Our agenda today is we'll start with introductions, logistics, and housekeeping. Then we'll go through an overview of the request for proposals, including selected items from the introduction in Section 1, the definitions in Section 2, the scope of work, Section 3, proposals and evaluations in Section 4, the award in Section 5, and we'll wrap up with an open Q&A. We'll save the last 20 minutes or so for that, for any questions regarding the RFP. And there will be a 10-minute break at approximately 3:30 p.m. So the purpose of the pre-proposal conference is to provide an opportunity for follow-up on questions that proposers may have related to the program or the process. This is going to be a technical discussion of the RFP, and it will follow the language and the structure in the RFP. We won't necessarily go through every part of the RFP. And, of course, proposers are responsible for every part of the RFP, whether we mention it or not in this conference, so we do encourage proposers to ask questions about all parts of the RFP, whether we mention them or not. Just a heads up that complex questions or questions of interpretation may be deferred and answered in writing following this conference, and we'll actually do a written write-up of everything covered, and I'll tell you about that more in just a moment. So again, this is going to be a technical discussion of the RFP. We won't be touching much on the program policy context, but if you'd like to see a full discussion of the policy context and the program background, you can go and look at our June 2017 informational webinar about the program, and that's available at the link on your screen right now. A couple of notes about logistics. So this presentation is all about your questions. We are delighted to be here today speaking with you about the RFP, and we're really looking forward to answering those questions and receiving your proposals in just a few weeks coming up. So in terms of how to ask a question, you can either use the chat function, which is in the sort of control panel for the webinar up on the upper right-hand corner of your screen, or you can raise your hand to ask a question, and we'll open up the line for you. We are going to review prior answers that we've given in the Q&A that was posted on ORPIN, and we'll bring those up during the relevant section of the RFP. We're also going to pause multiple times during each presentation section to invite you to ask questions. And we'll pause again at the end of each section of the presentation to invite you to ask questions about anything in that particular area of the RFP. And then finally, we'll have the open Q&A at the end. That's that last 20 minutes. And that's open for you to ask any questions about any part of the RFP. We do have a lot to cover today. So we might ask you to hold a question for the Q&A period if we're getting a little crunched for time, just to make sure that we can cover all the material for you today. In terms of official answers, as I said, all the questions that we answer today are going to be summarized and posted on ORPIN in the question log. And here's a critical point to remember: the written answer posted on ORPIN is the official answer. And we've just put up on ORPIN the slides for this presentation. The ones that were up there previously were marked as a draft. And so we've got the final slides that we're going to be going through today available for you on ORPIN. So a quick note about the difference between ORPIN and the OHID website, the Office of Health IT website. So the RFP and all the related documents, including all the Q&A, are located on ORPIN. You can see the web address on your screen. So that's all the official information, everything official about the RFP. ORPIN is the place to go. And we recommend that you check ORPIN regularly for updates. And if you find that you have any questions about ORPIN, how to use ORPIN, about the RFP, please contact David Reynolds. His email address is on the screen, and he'll help you out. If you have questions that are general information about the Health Information Exchange Onboarding Program, you can go to OHA's Office of Health IT website to get that general information. So a quick note about getting help or answers about the RFP. Know that the single point of contact for the RFP is David Reynolds. Again, there's his email address. He's there to help you, so please contact him with any questions you have, and he'll be glad to help get you an answer. The questions will be answered within approximately 4 business days, or sooner if we can. Critical point here, while the RFP is open and during the evaluation, you may not contact any staff in the Office of Health IT, any OHA staff, or any state employee or official about the RFP. You must direct those questions to the single point of contact. If you contact Office of Health IT staff or any state employee or official about the RFP, your proposal may be rejected. So please, please don't put your proposal in jeopardy. Err on the side of caution. If your question is about the RFP or if it potentially affects the RFP, please, please send your question to the single point of contact, and he'll be glad to help you out.
And this is Lisa, and I just want to emphasize, in the Office of Health IT, we really appreciate having open dialogue with our stakeholders and being able to talk to you about any issues throughout our programs and work and initiatives. However, during this time, we want to emphasize that we are under the restrictions of the RFP and do not want to jeopardize anyone's potential proposal, so please do not contact us. And if you do, we will have to let you know that we can't and move on from there.
Thanks, Lisa. Okay, a quick note about acronyms. We're going to try really hard not to throw a bunch of acronyms at you today, but a couple of ones that may come up in the presentation. CMS, that's the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. HIT refers to Health Information Technology. HIE refers to Health Information Exchange. OC&P refers to the Office of Contracts and Procurement. OHIT is OHA's Office of Health IT. OHA is, of course, the Oregon Health Authority. And ORPIN is Oregon Procurement Information Network. And then RFP is Request for Proposals. So I'll just wrap up with a short disclaimer. You'll also find this in the RFP, and that's that the statements made at the pre-proposal conference are not binding upon OHA or any purchasing entity. Proposers may be asked to submit questions in writing. OHA will consider all comments, concerns, questions, and protests if, based upon the comments, questions, concerns, or protests, OHA, in its sole discretion, believes that it should make a change to the solicitation documents, including the form contract, OHA will post an addendum in ORPIN. And remember, the answer posted in writing on ORPIN is the official answer. And one last reminder, this webinar is going to be recorded, and the recording will be posted on ORPIN, along with those slides, which are already available on ORPIN, and a written summary and official answers to all questions will be posted shortly after this webinar. And I'll turn it over to Kristen.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Kristen Bork, and I'm a lead policy analyst with the Office of Health IT, and I will be going over the overview of the request for proposals with you all today. So as we're going over the RFP, as Francie mentioned earlier, we've picked out selected items to discuss in detail throughout this presentation. However, as we're going through each section or at the end, depending, feel free to ask any questions about the sections, even if we have not covered that under the selected items. This is an opportunity to ask any kind of clarifying questions that you may have. So keep that in mind as we're going forward. All right. So first, we're going to go over Section 1, which is the purpose and overview for the RFP itself. We'll be discussing a little bit about the introduction and about the schedule, and then taking your questions about Section 1. So the introduction, this section provides basically the context for the RFP. So the purpose will be for onboarding and providing that initial connection only for Medicaid providers to a community-based health information exchange that provides meaningful HIE opportunities and plays a vital role for Medicaid and Oregon communities. This contract under this RFP will be funded with 90% federal funding from CMS. Contractors may also be eligible to receive support for the initial connection between contractors and entities or services that would be related to Oregon's planned network of networks in order to provide more value for the Medicaid providers that the contractors have onboarded under this program, which would further leverage the investments that the state makes in these contractors. For further information on the planned network of networks, please see Oregon's Strategic Plan for HIT-HIE 2017 to 2020, and the link to that strategic plan is available on the slide. OHA expects to award contracts to one or more proposers, or may award none. For more information, please see Section 4.6.2. Initial contracts, as well as any extensions, increases in value, and all other amendments may vary from contractor to contractor. Contracts will not necessarily be exactly the same. The overall not-to-exceed amount, NTE, you'll see that acronym a little bit more throughout the presentation, for all of the contracts combined is anticipated to be $25 million through September 2021. OHA may extend the length of the contracts, increase the value of the overall NTE, extend the length of the program, add additional work related to the planned network of networks. The actual funding for the contracts will depend on the availability of federal and state funding. Do we have any questions regarding Section 1.1, the introduction? No? Okay. Then I will go forward. Okay, so this is Section 1.2, which is the schedule for the RFP. And the highlighted dates to keep in mind particularly are that, one, we're in the pre-proposal conference today, so that's good. The RFP will be closing on December 6th at 3 p.m., and that closing means that proposals must be received at 3 p.m. local time, which is Pacific Standard, on December 6th. And we'll provide the address at which they must be received later in the presentation. Another date to note is that the notice of intent to award is going to be approximately December 22nd, 2017. If that date changes, we will make an update through ORFIN. OHA will issue an addendum to the RFP that reopens the question period through November 30th, 2017 at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time to allow any further clarification following this webinar. So do we have any questions about Section 1.2 or anything else in Section 1? Okay, great. Then we're going to go on to the next section, Section 2. The selected items for Section 2 are going to be the specific definitions that you see in front of you: community-based HIE, full-service HIE, specialty provider HIE, Medicaid provider, priority Medicaid provider. But Section 2 does include other parts in addition to the definition, so when we get to the end, please feel free to ask any questions about any section or any part of Section 2. So let's go through. So the first definition is community-based HIE. And a community-based HIE facilitates the bidirectional exchange of health and health-related information among unaffiliated stakeholders, regardless of the EHR they use. There are two key components to this. Participation must be open to unaffiliated participants, and they need not be members of the same provider organization, such as a hospital system, independent provider association, integrated delivery network. And participants must not be required to use the same EHR vendor or exchange data through a solution that requires use of a specific EHR. Continuing the definition, a community-based HIE provides, at a minimum, the following core HIE services: a community health record, and one or more of the following: support for referrals, lab results delivery, delivery of results from other ancillary services. An EHR-based exchange solution is not a community-based HIE. Community-based HIEs can be full-service HIEs or specialty provider HIEs. And we're going to go through those definitions in a minute. You'll see on the slide that hosted EHR solution has been crossed out, and this is a change that has been made to the RFP. So, a full-service HIE is a community-based HIE that offers HIE services to a broad range of provider types, specialties, and organizations. For example, small practices, clinics, labs, ancillary services, behavioral health, oral health, hospitals, and long-term care facilities. A specialty provider HIE is a community-based HIE that offers HIE services to only one type of provider or a narrow group of related providers. Okay, so the next definition is Medicaid provider. For the purposes of this program, a Medicaid provider is providers active with Oregon Medicaid and serving at least one Medicaid patient. A priority Medicaid provider is a Medicaid provider that has been designated as a priority for the HIE onboarding program. OHA may designate different priority Medicaid providers in different phases of the program. Phases may overlap or run concurrently. So do we have questions about any part of Section 2 that can either be on the definitions that we've covered, other definitions, or other parts?
Make sure to raise your hand if you have a question.
All right. Then we'll go on to the next section, which is Section 3, and we'll be covering the scope of work. The selected items that we'll be going over in Section 3 are Section 3.1.2, the HIE criteria, Section 3.1.4, the priority Medicaid providers, Section 3.1.5, community-centered onboarding, Section 3.1.7, which are a question that we've received, and then we'll go through any questions any of you all may have on any part of Section 3. So first, we'll be covering the summary of the HIE criteria. So again, a community-based HIE that provides meaningful HIE opportunities for priority Medicaid providers and that plays a vital role for Medicaid and communities. Also, the HIE must meet the minimum qualifications in Section 4.1, and we'll be going over those later. Demonstrate that it is sustainable both financially and otherwise. have a track record of successfully providing onboarding services, have robust privacy and security, and comply with all applicable laws, use standards-based and/or certified HIT, currently offer services that help fill HIE gaps in Oregon that are in alignment with Medicaid and HIT strategic plan goals, and have a roadmap that aligns with these same goals. In at least one region, have a relationship in terms of data, funding, or governance with at least one Oregon CCO, a major hospital, and a significant number of providers. Have an existing Oregon network that is large enough to offer value to priority Medicaid providers. Offer services to a broad range of priority Medicaid provider types, if a full-service HIE, or for a specialty provider HIE, offer services to a narrow range of related provider priority Medicaid provider types, plus fill an important gap that full-service HIEs are not filling, and exchange data with a full-service HIE. And the HIE cannot engage in practices that would result in information blocking. Must have the capacity, staffing and otherwise, to successfully perform the planning, onboarding, monitoring, and reporting functions required to perform the work. And please see the form contract, which is attachment 3 in the RFP package, for additional requirements. Are there any questions regarding section 3.1.2? Please raise your hand, or you can type it into the chat window. Okay. All right, so we don't see any questions, so I'm going to go to the next section. So now we're on section 3.1.4, where we discuss the priority Medicaid providers for phase one. So the priority Medicaid providers for phase one, the provider types are behavioral health, oral health, critical physical health, and major trading partners in behavioral, oral, and critical physical health. In particular, this program is an opportunity to provide greater support to behavioral health, which might include onboarding more behavioral health providers or other strategies that support behavioral health. Please see pages 18 to 19 in the RFP if you have any further. Yeah. Okay. So those were for phase one. So priority Medicaid providers for phase two may include long-term services and support, social services, and other providers whose work impacts the social determinants of health, such as transportation, housing, and food security. The specific priority Medicaid providers for phase two and later phases under this contract will be determined by OHA at a later date. And again, phases may overlap or run concurrently. Are there any questions about section 3.1.4? Okay. All right. So our next section, we will be discussing community-centered onboarding and what we mean by Medicaid partners. So the contractor must coordinate with Medicaid partners who are likely to be CCOs, community mental health programs, and or other single regional point of contact for behavioral health and tribes in each region when creating annual work plans. All work to be done under the contract will be done according to a work plan that is approved by OHA. The work plan will include priority Medicaid providers only. Medicaid partners will also have an opportunity to comment on relevant sections of the contractor's annual work plan. And so for that, please see Appendix C. So this is Appendix C. This is also available in the RFP. And so we're going to pause here for a minute so that people can read it and take it in, and then let me know if you have any questions on this workflow. Okay. Okay, so we have a question?
Yes. How do providers get onto the priority Medicaid providers list?
Okay,
what
so...
What is the process for some?
Okay. So if I understand correctly, the question is, how do the providers get onto the priority Medicaid providers list?
So this is Francie Neville. The Oregon Health Authority and the Office of Health IT engaged in a process of speaking with stakeholders across Oregon when developing the program, and that is described in more detail in the June 2017 webinar that's posted on the website. We had an advisory group. We met with a large number of different types of stakeholders separately. We studied other programs in other states, and ultimately we came to the decision to prioritize those specific provider types listed in the table in phase one. So that's how we arrived at that at phase one.
Thank you.
Okay.
And is that list published, the list of priority Medicaid providers?
So what I have up in front of you is the chart that describes the provider types that will be considered as part of the priority Medicaid providers. There is not a, if I'm, are you asking if we have a specific list of individual providers, or are you asking if we have a more detailed list?
I'm asking if you have a specific list of agencies or organizations or treatment centers.
Okay. So in terms of the level of detail that we have, if you see the provider type and then next to it, it says specific providers, which lists the types of programs and the types of organizations. That's the level of specificity that we have right now in terms of the priority Medicaid providers. Part of the development of the work plan will be working with those CCOs and other Medicaid partners to determine which are the priority Medicaid providers that should be put on the work plan.
Okay.
So does that answer your, I want to make sure that we've answered the question.
Yeah, it does answer my question.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. We appreciate that. Okay. Are there any other questions about the priority Medicaid providers or about the sample workflow for the work plan? No? Okay. Thank you. Okay. So are there any other questions on this section or no? Okay. All right. So now we're going to be discussing the community-centered onboarding from the provider side costs. So contracted HIEs will be required to provide meaningful financial support for provider-side HIE onboarding costs for entities that face barriers and that are onboarded under this program. Support could include offsetting all or part of provider-side EHR vendor costs through financial or in-kind support, reduced or eliminated HIE subscription fees for a period of time, or other support. OHA will also, in addition to that support, provide support to entities to partially offset entities' administrative costs through a milestone-based payment that is passed through the contractor direct to the entities. Are there any questions on the provider side costs? Okay. Sorry, I lost my place for a minute. Okay, so, oh wait.
It looks like someone's trying to ask a question, so we're just trying to make sure we can get that and hear that question.
Okay. So the question that we have is there a cap on amount on that last slide, which I believe is for the provider side cost? So in terms of the amount to be provided for the provider side cost, that amount will be determined during negotiations with a successful proposer. And so we'll be able to we'll go into more details during the negotiations. So does anyone have any follow-up to that or any other part of the provider side cost? Okay. All right. So the next section, continuing with community-centered onboarding, we'll be discussing the regions. Contractors must go through an approval process to begin onboarding in a region. The CCO must affirmatively agree to a single contractor receiving support for onboarding in that region. Some exceptions apply, and we'll be going over those in a minute. And the CCO must have a relationship with that contractor in terms of data, funding, or governance. Contractors will be required to provide proof that these conditions are met. There are two exceptions. Each tribal clinic may choose to onboard to any contractor under this program, regardless of the regional territory of that contractor. OHA may provide support to both a full-service HIE and a specialty provider HIE in a single region if the HIEs exchange data with each other. The CCOs in the region must agree to the specialty provider HIE in addition to the full-service HIE. So in front of you is a chart that describes the different scenarios that may be present. There may be a region with one CCO and one HIE. There may be a region with one CCO and multiple HIEs. And there may be a region with multiple CCOs and either one or multiple HIEs. So I'm giving you a minute to look at this, and then we can answer any questions that you may have on this section. Okay. So we did receive a question regarding the regions earlier, and the Q&A that we're presenting in this slide deck is also available in the Q&A log on ORPIN as well. So the question we received is, I'm planning to submit for XCCO region and YCCO region. Do I have to submit separate applications for each CCO? And if so, who would the primary applicant be? So the answer is no. Each interested HIE should submit one proposal only. Proposers are required to, in at least one region, have a relationship in terms of data, funding, or governance with at least one Oregon CCO, a major hospital, and a significant number of providers, and attach a letter from an Oregon Medicaid Coordinated Care Organization, or the CCO, with which the proposer has a data, governance, or funding relationship, stating that it generally endorses the proposer's HIE's participation in the program. However, HIEs are not bidding for region-by-region contracts to provide HIE onboarding services. A contractor awarded under this procurement would, theoretically, allow a contractor to receive milestone-based payments for onboarding in any region. The actual regions for which a contractor may receive milestone-based payments will be determined by the ongoing CCO agreement process, which is described in Section 3.1.5, as well as OHA's approval of the annual work plan. Regions may be added or removed over the course of the contract. Keep in mind that one of the goals of the program is to increase I'm sorry, not increase. We don't want to increase gaps. We really don't. We would like to address them. We'd like to address geographical gaps in community-based HIE. So contractors that are adding services in new regions over the course of the program is a desirable outcome. And it looks like we have a question.
Sean?
Oh, okay. So we have a question from Sean.
Oh.
Do you want to go ahead?
Yes. I'm just wondering, could you elaborate a little bit on what a funding relationship means?
Okay. Hi, Sean. Thank you. So so the question we have is, could we elaborate on what the funding relationship means? And so this is a really important question, and we want to make sure that we get you the right answer. So we're going to go and consult with the full team and follow up in writing as soon as possible. So the question that we're going to follow up with is, could you elaborate on the funding relationship? And we're going to go back and do a consultation and get that up in writing, and that will be available on the ORPIN Q&A. Okay. So do we have any follow-up questions on that or any other part? All right. Okay. Thank you, Sean. Okay. So we've also received a question on the milestone-based payments, which is section 3.1.7. So I'm going to summarize this, and you can see the full question on your screen. But the question essentially is, please clarify how OHA will define an entity slash organization for the purposes of payment. Excuse me. So the answer is that the RFP defines entity as a hospital, clinic, health system, organization, solo practice, or other similar group that shares an EHR or other system of managing health and health-related information. Connecting the entity to the HIE will connect all of its Medicaid providers to the HIE, and that definition is found in the RFP on page 7. So, for example, a practice with several clinics in different physical locations, all of which are using the same instance of an EHR, is an entity for the purposes of onboarding if, when the HIE creates an EHR integration connection between that instance of the EHR and the HIE, the practice and all its clinics are connected to the HIE because they all use the same instance of the EHR. So we acknowledge that the definition of entity is a bit challenging due to complex EHR and organizational structures, and we encourage proposers to please be transparent about their assumptions in the cost proposals. And remember, the cost proposals are required but are not scored. The final definition of entity for purposes of any contracts will be determined during contract negotiations. So are there questions about 3.1.7 or any part of Section 3? Okay. All right. So now we are on Section 4, which will go over the proposal and the evaluation. So Section 4 is long, and so the selected items that we've decided on for purposes of this are going to be minimum qualifications, the submission requirements in the procurement process, proposal requirements, an overview of the evaluation, final selection and award, proposal rejection. But keep in mind, as with the other sections, if there's anything that we don't cover or anything that we cover that you have a question on, please feel free to ask questions at the end. Okay, so the minimum qualifications are available in the RFP on pages 34 to 35, and the template to fill out regarding the minimum qualifications is available on pages 67 to 70. So what we're going to do first is go over some questions that we've received regarding the minimum qualifications, and then we'll go through a little bit of the minimum qualifications themselves. Okay. So we received a question on minimum qualification number 3, which, as a reminder, That made it sound like I was right about to say something. Okay. So minimum qualification number 3 is that a proposer's HIE has a connection to at least one hospital physically located in Oregon and 10 clinics physically located in Oregon. So the question is, related to minimum qualification number 3, does the requirement to have an established HIE product connection for a hospital or clinic refer to a vendor's entire HIE solution or one or more components of the vendor's HIE solution? So first off, let's remember that a proposer's HIE throughout the RFP refers to proposer's community-based HIE. And the proposer's community-based HIE must be connected to one hospital physically located in Oregon and 10 clinics physically located in Oregon. As a reminder, a community-based HIE facilitates the bidirectional exchange of health and health-related information among unaffiliated stakeholders regardless of the EHR they use. And remember, there are 2 key components to this. One, that participation must be open to unaffiliated participants, and that participants must not be required to use the same EHR vendor or exchange data through a solution that requires the use of a specific EHR. Also, the community-based HIE must provide, at a minimum, the following core HIE services, which are a community health record and one or more of the following: support for referrals, lab results delivery, delivery of results from other ancillary services. And as a reminder, a hosted EHR solution is not a community-based HIE. And we've covered the definitions of the full service and specialty provider HIEs earlier in the presentation. So, we also received a question regarding minimum qualification number 10, which, as a reminder, is that the proposer must attach a letter from an Oregon Medicaid coordinated care organization with which the proposer has a data, governance, or funding relationship, stating that it generally endorses proposer's HIE's participation in the program. So, related to minimum qualification number 10, the question asks, does a requirement for a letter of support from a CCO refer to a vendor's entire HIE solution or one or more components of a vendor's HIE solution? And so, again, this goes back to the definition of a proposer's community-based HIE and the requirement to attach a letter from a CCO with which the proposer has data, governance, or funding relationship, stating that it generally endorses the proposer's HIE's participation in the program. Okay. So the next question that we received regarding the minimum qualifications is a general question about the qualifications. The question is, can a hospital apply for the grant? Can a hospital's foundation or benefit arm apply for the grant? And the answer is that any organization may submit a proposal. However, an organization's proposal will not be considered for an award if it does not both pass the Section 4.1 minimum qualifications and achieve a pass on all other pass-fail sections, which are listed in Section 4.5.1.10, and achieve a score of 75% or more on each of the evaluation sections. And we'll be going over these later in the presentation. The proposals must also be responsive and follow other rules as stated in the RFP, and proposers must also be responsible. Furthermore, OHA may award one or more contracts, or may elect not to award any contracts in this procurement, and OHA will determine how many awards are in the state's best interest. OHA does understand that preparing proposals can be time-consuming and costly. When deciding whether or not to submit a proposal, organizations may find it useful to begin in Section 4.1, the minimum qualifications, and walk through each item to see if its organization meets all the requirements of that section. Ultimately, OHA is unable to determine in advance if any given organization's proposal will be successful. OHA encourages all interested organizations to submit proposals. And then there's further information we're incorporating into the official RFP Q&A, an answer that was given to a question posed prior to the release of the RFP which may also be helpful to organizations as they look at whether or not to submit a proposal. And this is available in your slide deck. Okay, so as I said, we'll just quickly go over the minimum qualifications right now. So the first one is that a proposer is a business in good standing whose business includes establishing policies for health information exchange, providing governance for health information exchange, and providing services for health information exchange. The proposer's HIE has current HIE business operations, including the active exchange of clinical health information. The proposer's HIE has a connection to at least one hospital or 10 clinic and 10 clinics, one hospital and 10 clinics, physically located in Oregon. The proposer's HIE is connected to at least one eligible professional or eligible hospital that has received at least one incentive under the Medicaid EHR incentive program. The proposer's HIE offers at least one service that enables eligible professionals or eligible hospitals to receive incentives to meet meaningful use under the Medicaid EHR incentive program. Proposer's HIE is a community-based HIE. Proposer's HIE offers both EHR integration connections and portal-only connections. Proposer is willing to provide support for the costs incurred by entities that face barriers and that are connected to its HIE under the program. Proposer's HIE has active connections to at least two unaffiliated EHR vendors. And as we discussed in the earlier question, attach a letter from a CCO with which the proposer has a data, governance, or funding relationship. And do we have any questions about Section 4.1?
Yes.
Okay. Hi, Rhonda, I believe you have a question.
Yes, thank you. So how would we answer or what information would you be looking for if, since we are a CCO and a proposer, what would be the best answer that? What information would you be looking for?
And can you elaborate on which part that you're asking about?
So in the request for a letter from the CCO, so we are the CCO and we are will be a proposer for the RFP. So do we pat ourselves on the back and say, yeah, we're great, and here's our letter of recommendation to ourselves, or is there some other information that you're looking for?
I think we can't necessarily answer specific to your situation, but you would look to the CCO.
Yeah,
if there's an endorsement.
Yeah.
I think, Rhonda, we're just going to defer that one. We
yeah.
just want to take a moment to process and make sure that we give you the right answer, but we'll get back with you very shortly on that following the presentation. Sorry, we don't have an immediate answer on that one.
No problem. Thank you for considering it.
Okay. Yeah, not a problem.
All right. Thank you. Okay, do we have any other questions? Okay. All right, next section. So the next section is section 4.2 to 4.3, which covers the submission requirements and the procurement process. So the submission requirements and the procurement process, those are available on pages 35 to 40 of the RFP. So please make sure that you read the instructions carefully. And as we said before, and we'll probably say a few more times during the presentation, if you have any questions, please remember that the single point of contact, who's David Reynolds, is there to help you. And we have his email address on this slide as well. And we wanted folks to keep in mind some common mistakes that are made in the submission of an RFP. So some common mistakes that have been made are failure to submit all required information in the required format, failure to sign the proposal in ink, failure to submit on time. And as I said earlier in the schedule overview, the RFP must be received through either mail, parcel carrier, or hand delivery by the single point of contact by December 6, 2017 at 3 p.m. local time, which is Pacific Standard Time. The address at which the RFP must be received, or the proposal must be received, is listed below, and it's the DHS Office of Contracts and Procurement at the Oregon Department of Human Services, 800 Northeast Oregon Street, Suite 640, Portland, Oregon, 97232. So are there any questions on, oh, sorry, so we've received a question on 4.3.4.1. So the question is, how may a proposer protest or negotiate the terms and conditions of the proposed contract? So the answer is, under the RFP, the successful proposer may only negotiate the terms and conditions listed in Section 5.4.2 of the RFP when negotiating the contract. If a proposer wants the agency to consider other terms for negotiation, it would need to protest under the solicitation protest provision of Section 4.3.4.1. The agency, in response to such a solicitation protest, may elect to add terms for negotiation or may deny the protest. The question does point out that there was a longer question, but this is a summary, and this will be available in the Q&A log for Orban. So the wording of 4.3.4.1 suggested some future ability to protest the terms and conditions of the contract. The intent of the final clause of Section 4.3.4.1 is to state that certain limited terms of the sample contract are subject to negotiation. Therefore, the agency is issuing an addendum to the RFP to clarify Section 4.3.4.1 as follows.
We have it.
Yes, so it has been, it is already issued and it is up on Orban. So this will also reopen the solicitation protest period to allow proposers to protest the solicitation if the proposer wants the agency to consider altering the terms and conditions of the contract or allow negotiation of a term or condition during contract negotiations. Now, please keep in mind that this reopening of the solicitation protest period only applies to protests regarding the terms and conditions of the proposed contract. No other part of the solicitation protest period has been reopened. Only protests regarding the terms and conditions of the proposed contract will be considered. For all other portions of the RFP, the solicitation protest period ended on October 27, 2017. So here's some select language from Addendum 2. Because the ambiguity may affect proposers' opportunity to protest the terms and conditions of the proposed contract during the initial RFP protest period, the protest period for the terms and conditions of the proposed contract only will be reopened. And we've bolded, the new protest period will close on November 22nd, 2017 at 5 p.m. local time, which is Pacific Standard Time. No other part of the RFP may be protested within the new protest period. And the time to protest all other parts of the RFP ended on October 27th, 2017. So do we have any questions about sections 4.2 to 4.3? Nope. All right. We'll keep going. Okay. So section 4.4 discusses the proposal requirements. So the RFP reviewers will only consider the information included in the proposal to evaluate the proposal. So that means anything included in your RFP packet that responds to the RFP questions, that will be the information that's included in the evaluation of the proposal. Proposals must provide a concise description of the proposer's ability to satisfy the requirements of the RFP, with an emphasis on completeness and clarity of content. Proposals that merely offer to provide services as stated in this RFP or that give summary answers where narrative or other information is requested will be considered non-responsive. So now we're going to go over briefly the proposal requirements, which are found on pages 41 to 49. So generally, we'll be looking at organizational capacity, and under that is included some general information about the organization, the HIE services and connections, privacy and security, sustainability, and community relationships. There are also requirements for descriptions and questions on program planning, onboarding services, and program monitoring and reporting. We have received a question on community relationships. So the question is that section 4.4.5.5 sub 3 requires a summary answer at a high level for the requirements in section 4.4.5.5 sub 2. Please clarify. So the answer is that the section sub 3 requires much less detail than sub 2. For the regions in which the proposer is providing HIE services, proposers should briefly describe any CCO involvement and data, funding, or governance relationships with the CCOs, provide a short overview of the HIE's relationship with major hospitals, providers, and clinics, give a high-level summary of the types of data exchanged, and state the estimated number of connections. Lists of individual connections and details about the types of data exchanged are not required. So the question is a supplement to sub 2 and will allow the evaluation committee to evaluate to what extent the proposer has strong community relationships in Oregon and relationships with CCOs, hospitals, and providers. And please see addendum regarding Appendix D, which is page 87. Okay, so we're going to continue with proposal requirements. So additional requirements are also to discuss the key persons. There will be 5 maximum key persons, and please remember to read the roles and titles carefully in this section. There's also a requirement to describe staff training and hiring/contracting, provide references, and then the cost proposal. The proposer must follow the format in Attachment 4, regardless of proposer's standard pricing models. The proposer may include additional information about costs, but must also fill in the cost proposal in the format given. Please explain how the proposer calculated the proposed milestone amounts and provide documentation of the costs. We have received a question regarding the cost proposal. So in reviewing the cost model for milestones 1 to 4, we want to clarify what the expectation is for budgeting. Do you advise creating a cost model based upon what it will cost for each connection? Or should we budget the project at a flat rate regardless of the number of providers we connect? So the answer is that section 3.1.7 addresses the issue. Total amounts are intended to be a fair proxy for a contractor's average cost per connection, which is not including the milestone-based payments passed through the contractor to partially offset entities' administrative costs. However, payments may not cover all of the contractor's onboarding costs for every entity. So Attachment 4, which is the cost proposal, asks for the proposed schedule of milestone-based payments that the proposer would receive for each entity onboarded. For instance, Row 5 asks for the schedule of proposed payments for milestones 1 and 4 for any given portal-only connection. So, the proposer would distribute across milestones 1 and 4 a fair proxy for a contractor's average cost for a portal-only connection. The total cost does not have to be distributed evenly across all milestones. The payment that a contractor receives for a given milestone would be the same for each entity connected, regardless of the actual cost to complete the tasks required for that milestone for a specific entity. Different types of connections would have different schedules of payments to account for differences in average costs for each different type of connection. So do we have any questions about Section 4.4? No. All right. Okay. So now we're going to do an overview of the evaluation. This is sections 4.5 to 6, and it's in pages 53 to 57. So we're going to go through this step by step. This is a synthesis of the evaluation component, and it's at a higher level. We're not going to be going into specific detail during this section, but please remember, as in other sections, feel free to ask any questions that you may have. So to give you a quick outline, the evaluation includes step one, which is the pass-fail criteria, step two, which is the scoring, and step three, which is the ranking. Additional items in the evaluation include A, responsiveness, and B, responsibility. So for step one, we have the pass-fail criteria, which can be found on pages 55 through 56, section 4.5.1.10. Each proposal must clearly meet the pass-fail criteria. You can see there are three sections that are pass or fail criteria. Section 4.1, minimum qualifications. Section 4.2.1, proposal requirements. And section 4.4.5.1, organizational capacity general information. It's not scored but is required. These are all pass-fail. If any section is failed, the proposal will not move forward. So step two in the process is scoring. So we've gotten through pass-fail, and now we're into scoring. All sections will have equal weight, and a proposer must score at least 75% on each section in order to be ranked and considered for an award. And what you see in front of you are the scored sections. They're organizational capacity for HIE services and connections, privacy and security, sustainability, community, planning and onboarding, monitoring and reporting, and key persons. A proposer who scores less than 75% on any section will not move forward. So step three in the process, after we've gone through pass-fail and scoring, we go to ranking. So the proposals that achieve a 75% or better on each section of the evaluation will be ranked according to score. And these proposals may be considered for award. Okay.
Hi, this is David Reynolds, and I'd like to talk a little bit about the responsiveness section real quick. Responsiveness in section 4.6.2, page 57. The responsive scored proposers that achieve a 75% or better on each section of the evaluation, and again reference sections 4.5.1.1, 4.5.1.7, will be ranked accordingly to score, and the proposers may be considered for the award. Some examples of non-responsiveness are section 4.5, page 53, where the proposer merely offered to provide services as stated in this RFP or that give a summary of answers where a narrative or other information is required. A second item, in the general information, failure to provide this information in section 4.4.5.1, page 41. And on section 4.4.12, page 52, the cost proposal, that's very important. Section 4.5.1.9, page 55, failure to submit a cost proposal that means required submission, or that meets required submission criteria as well. Additionally, the responsibility section on page 57, section 4.6.1, prior to the award, OC&P intends to evaluate whether a successful proposer meets the applicable standards of responsibility identified in OAR 137-047-0500. In doing so, OC&P may request information in addition to that already required in the RFP. Investigation and evaluation of responsibility may include information agency requests of proposers' references.
Okay. So just to recap, as what the evaluation will look like is first, so it will be the pass-fail criteria, and then for proposers that successfully go through that, there will be scoring, and then ranking, and then the additional items of responsiveness and responsibility. So do we have received a question. So the question we received is, we assume that the questions listed in 4.5.1.1 to 4.5.1.7 and in Section D are simply there to guide evaluators in judging the validity and quality of vendors' responses to previous sections, and that we do not need to answer these questions again. Is that a correct assumption? The answer is that yes. Sections 4.5.1.1 to 4.5.1.7 and Appendix D are for the guidance of the evaluators and are not meant to be answered by the proposers. These sections were provided so that the proposers could see the evaluation criteria for the responses. So does anyone have any questions about the evaluation process? All right. Okay.
Okay. Section 4.6.2, the award section. The responsive scored proposals that achieve a 75% or better on each select section of the evaluation will be ranked accordingly to score, and those proposals may be considered for award. Furthermore, OHA may award one or more contracts. OHA may elect to award any contracts in this, or not to award any contracts in this procurement. OHA will determine how many awards are in the state's best interest. In the event that multiple awards are intended to be made, they will be made in rank order, beginning with the top-ranked proposer, unless negotiations are unsuccessful. OHA may enter into negotiations with the proposers to whom OHA intends to make an award.
And we're going to pause just a minute for a question. So our question is, how does the ranking affect the awarding? Oh, and it looks like that's been answered. Do we need any follow-up on that question? Just going to give a moment.
Okay.
So we're good on that. We won't answer that question, but if anyone has a question about that, please feel free to ask that. Great.
Okay, so proposal rejection. OCMP will reject a proposal's proposal if the proposer attempts to influence a member of the proposal evaluation committee regarding the proposal review and evaluation process. OCMP may reject a proposal for any of the following additional reasons. If the proposal fails to substantially comply with all prescribed solicitation procedures and requirements, including but not limited to the requirement that the proposal's authorized representative sign the proposal in ink. The proposal is received after the specified date and time. The proposer makes any unauthorized contact regarding this RFP with state employees or officials other than the single point of contact.
Okay, so do we have any questions about Section 4.6 or anything else in Section 4? Great. All right, we don't see any questions. So now we're going to go over Section 5, and Dave will discuss the award and negotiations.
Selected items for Section 5, Section 5.1 awards, Section 5.4 negotiations, and questions on any part of Section 5. The apparent successful proposer will be notified in writing via posting in Orbit, and OCMP will set the timelines for the contract negotiation as applicable. After final selection or selections is made, OHA will issue a notice of intent to award announcement on the ORPIN system. Please see Section 5.1.1 for additional information. A courtesy email notice may also be sent. However, the posting on ORPIN is the official notice of the intent to award. A proposal will have 7 calendar days after the date of the notice of intent to award to submit a written protest to the sole point of contact. Please see section 5.2.1 for that. Continuing on with the negotiation section in 5.4, CRFP for negotiable sections under the form contract. We've actually listed that in several different places in the RFP on where we can negotiate. If negotiations are not successful within 45 days of the start of the negotiations or at an earlier time, if OHA in its sole discretion reasonably determines that negotiations will not result in the award of the contract, OHA may terminate the negotiations with the apparent successful proposal.
Okay, so do we have any questions about anything in Section 5? Okay. All right. So we're going to go ahead and take a 10-minute break. So it, according to our clock, it is 3:11. So we will reconvene at 3:21. Thank you. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. So I hope you had a nice restful break. And now we're going to continue with the open Q&A. Before we go into the open Q&A, though, we had a couple of corrections and some general Q&A that we wanted to go over with you. First, we wanted to make sure that everyone was aware that there is a courtesy copy of the RFP in Word format that's available on ORPIN. So in case that would be easier for you to use, please feel free. Appendix C was mistakenly labeled as Appendix E in the attachments, and that has been corrected on ORPIN. And an addendum has been issued to make a minor correction in the definition of community-based HIE and to correct some of the language in Appendix D. I know the slide says will be issued, but it has been issued now.
And then there's also the second addendum regarding the reopening of a portion of the solicitation protest option for the terms and conditions of the proposed contract.
Mm-hmm.
That is now live.
Good.
Oh.
Okay, and then we have one more correction. So earlier in the presentation, I provided the address to which the proposals must be hand-carried or mailed, and we actually have an update to that address.
Okay, that address, please look at the cover page of the RFP, and that the cover page that is actually posted in ORPIN has the correct address. And I'm going to pull that address up real quick. So everybody has it, if I can.
We'll come back to you with that address a little bit later in the presentation, but what is on ORPIN is correct, and what we said verbally is wrong. And we're going to also print the correct address in the Q&A following this. So that you have that available. It's the Salem address, not the Portland address.
Okay. All right. So this is an open period for questions and answers, so please feel free to ask any questions about any section, and you can either use the chat function or raise your hand.
We do want to also follow up about the question that Rhonda asked earlier in the presentation. Rhonda asked how would a proposer that was also a CCO handle a response to minimum qualification number 10. So that's in section 4.1, and it's the very last minimum qualification. That's right on page
35 of the RFP. So we were able to confer, and the answer to the question is there is nothing in this question that restricts which Oregon CCO can write that letter. As long as it's an Oregon CCO, and as long as there is a data, funding, or governance relationship, and that CCO is generally endorsing proposers' HIE's participation in the program, that would meet that qualification, number 10. If there's any follow-up on that, please feel free to add that, and I think we have a few other questions. Do we have any additional questions?
It looks like we have one question, but the person doesn't have audio pin entered.
Mm.
So I'm waiting to see if they're having, they're going to write the question. Okay, so here it is.
Okay, so this question is, who is expected to contribute data versus consume data? Is the primary intent to get hospital and general practitioner data exposed to the behavioral health therapist or vice versa? Same for dentistry. That's one that we will answer, but we want to take a moment to make sure that we've got a complete and correct answer. So we're going to take that one back to the full team, and we're going to follow up in writing as soon as possible. So we'll make sure to get that posted on ORPIN as quickly as possible to help folks as they move forward with their proposals.
Okay. So are there any other questions?
And just to say, we did receive a few questions via chat that were more detailed questions. And we will make sure to respond to all of those questions. Because it's a more detailed question, we are going to take time to consult and follow up in writing to make sure that we can give you a thorough and accurate answer.
And those will still be posted on the Q&A log on ORPIN.
So we're going to get those up absolutely as soon as possible. Any other questions? Oh.
Okay, Rhonda, we've unmuted you if you'd like to ask your question.
So did I understand you to say that any CCO in the state could write that letter of recommendation if there is that relationship established?
Right, so there's nothing in question 10 that says anything other than it needs to be a letter from a CCO that the proposer has a data, governance, or funding relationship, and that it generally endorses proposers' HIE's participation in the program. So there's no limitation on which CCO it is or anything like that, as long as the letter of qualification 10 is met, it would be, that should be sufficient to meet that particular qualification.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So it doesn't look like we have any further questions. So we would like to thank you very much for your participation. What? No, I don't. I have to. So the RFP schedule you see in front of you, so just again to reiterate that we have reopened the question period, and so we will be accepting questions through November 30th. At 5 p.m. local time, which is Pacific Standard Time, that the proposals are due to be received at the Salem address on December 6th at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. which is Pacific Standard Time, and that the notices of intent to award will be issued approximately on December 22nd. And it does look like we've had an additional question. So we're looking up what that question is right now.
So the question is, the criteria suggests that the vendor must currently be engaged in HIEs in the state of Oregon. Is that correct? I'm not sure I fully understand the question. Rebecca, are you able to speak over the phone to me? Unmute her. Rebecca, we've unmuted your line. Are you able to ask your question verbally? I want to make sure we understand it. So, Rebecca, we're not able to hear you, so I'm just going to read the clarifying question that you put in. It appears that only current Oregon HIE incumbents will be considered. Is that right? And so there are a number of different pieces of the RFP that speak to Oregon relationships. I'll say that those include having a connection to at least one hospital physically located in Oregon and 10 clinics physically located in Oregon. That's minimum qualifications, section 4.1 on page 34. That's the third minimum qualification. There's, of course, the minimum qualification regarding that relationship with an Oregon CCO. And there's also a section in the technical proposal that is section 4.4.5.5, community relationships, which requires certain community relationships within the Oregon regions that have been defined. So those are some of the parts of the RFP that speak to Oregon connections. And you might also find it useful to look at the HIE, the summary of the HIE criteria, which is in section 3.1.2. And that notes that the proposer's HIE must have an existing Oregon network that is large enough to offer value to priority Medicaid providers, which of course are Oregon providers. So those are some of the items that speak to Oregon relationships. Once we're offline, we'll look for any other items that speak to that, but those are the ones off the top of my head. So I hope that's helpful to you in evaluating what Oregon relationships are required. Is there more follow-up that would be helpful? I'm not seeing anything. We'll post a summary of that answer, and because that's a somewhat complex question.
Oh, hold on a second.
Oh. So the follow-up is, integration engine vendors who have experience in Oregon but not a full-blown HIE will not be considered. Is that right? So I think what we'll want to do is take this one offline and
right.
try to give a more thorough overview mm-hmm. of the Oregon connections required to make sure that we're presenting all of that to you to look through.
Right. And also, just as a reminder, the official answers are those that will be posted in ORPIN in writing. And so we will be following up after this and posting the questions and answers from this in writing to ensure that we're able to be as explicit as possible in our answers. And in the meantime, and we're hoping to get that up within 4 days, and in the meantime,
we would advise anyone who is looking at the proposal and trying to determine whether or not to apply to really review the minimum qualifications, review the HIE criteria, and to review those review the definitions, particularly for community-based HIE, to determine if you believe your organization fits into those. So do we have any other questions? We want to make sure that we give folks ample time and opportunity. Okay, so just to go back and go over the RFP schedule again, just to make sure we're all on the same page. So we're reopening the question period, and all questions will be due by November 30th at 5 p.m. local time, which is Pacific Standard Time. The RFP will be closing. That means proposals must be received by December 6th at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Pacific Standard Time, at the Salem address that is listed on the cover page of the RFP posted on ORPIN, and we'll be updating that on ORPIN as well in the Q&A, just to make sure you definitely have the address. The notice of intent to award will be issued approximately on the 22nd, and if that date changes, we'll update that on ORPIN. So just to recap, if you have any questions or if you want any help about the RFP, the single point of contact for the RFP is Dave Reynolds, and his email address is in the slides. It's on the RFP. Every way to contact Dave is available to you. He is there to help you, so please, please, please contact him if there's any questions. As a reminder, the new closing date for the questions is November 30th. Questions, to the extent that they can be, will be answered within 4 business days. Please, as a reminder, you may not contact the Office of Health IT, OH, or any staff members of OHA directly about the RFP. Everything should go to Dave. The official answers to today's questions will be posted on ORPIN shortly. So we do want to thank you very much for taking time this afternoon to walk through the RFP, and we thank you very much for your interest in this opportunity. We're really excited about the opportunity to increase HIE onboarding for Medicaid providers in Oregon, and we're really excited to be working with folks to expand access to HIE to providers throughout the state. Thank you again.